Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Today's episode is a fascinating look at the connection between our guts and our brains. This powerful two-way communication between our digestive system and our mind influences everything from mood and sleep to focus and decision-making, you know, all of our executive function skills. And guess what? You're going to get to hear us talk about poop. And according to my guest, we should be talking about it more. My guest is Dr. Anastasia Galanopoulos, and she is a developmental psychologist and parent coach who is passionate about teaching people about how our gut health shapes our mental health and executive functioning. Anastasia's interest in this field began with her own health struggles, experiences that led her to connect the dots between nutrition, stress, and brain function in both children and adults. In our conversation, we talk about the science of that brain-gut connection. I have to admit, it sounds pretty unbelievable to me, but it's a thing, people. It's a real thing. How to recognize signs that your microbiome might be out of balance, and what kinds of foods and daily habits can help restore it, including eating fermented foods, getting plant-rich meals, and managing our stress. Before we dive in, I want to acknowledge something really important. We are in an incredibly difficult time right now with inflation, increasing grocery prices, the government shutdown directly impacting families' access to food, widespread layoffs, tariffs, and all the other stuff we're going through right now. It has become even harder for many families to afford basic groceries, let alone organic produce or specialty foods. Some of what you'll hear us discuss reflects access to food that isn't everyone's reality. While we do acknowledge this during our conversation, I wanted to mention it here too. So as you listen, I encourage you to take what's helpful, adapt it to what's possible for you, you know, use your flexible thinking, and remember that good enough nutrition that's within your means and circumstances can still make a really meaningful difference to your health. And if you're listening and you do have the means to eat these foods, please make a contribution to your local food bank. I did, and I'd love for our Focus Forward fans to help make a difference too. Okay, thank you for consideration, and let's get on with the show. Hi, Anastasia. Thanks so much for coming on Focus Forward.
Hi, Hannah. It's so great to be here with you today, and thank you for inviting me. And I just want to give a shout out to Wendy Craven also for introducing us. I really appreciate it.
For any listeners who don't know, Wendy Craven is a colleague of mine at Beyond Booksmart, and she is one of our outreach coordinators. So she works with all of the providers that we connect with to, we provide resources for them, and they provide hopefully contacts for us for helping new people with coaching. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Great. Cool. All right. So we are here to talk about the gut-brain connection. So for anybody who doesn't know what the gut-brain connection is, could you explain that for our listeners?
Yes, absolutely. So it's exactly what it sounds like. It's the connection between the gut and the brain and all the ways in which this sort of silent communication affects us in health-changing ways, in all kinds of ways. So the gut is part of the enteric nervous system, and that's separate from the central nervous system that includes our brain and our spinal cord and organs like that, or parts of the body like that. And it really is responsible for what goes on, that the chemical reactions that go on in our gut are really responsible for all sorts of aspects of our health, from mental health to physical health to our immune responses to, you know, some neurodevelopmental issues or conditions like ADHD, some of the people that you help in your coaching, to neurodegenerative diseases like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, to, you know, chronic disease like, you know, heart disease or diabetes or something like that, or obesity, anything and everything, really. So it's an exciting, relatively new area of research, but we're learning so much about how our body communicates, and the gut is an essential part of this communication. Yeah.
So, do you think that, or what you just said about how it's a new area, do you think that this is why more people don't know about this gut-brain connection and the importance of
Absolutely.
it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a twofold reason as I'm thinking about it. I think number one, it's new. It's less than 25 years old. And it the good news about it being new is that so many people, so many researchers across the world are really looking at this question and what's actually happening. And we're learning things day by day, actually. So we have new studies that are coming out. Places in the US like Stanford and Washington University in St. Louis, but all over the world. I was just reading a study from Pakistan, and I was just before I got on, I was trying to actually locate it because I can't remember what the new finding was, but I was like, Pakistan, oh my God,
Yeah, that's so cool.
there's a great lab, microbiome lab in Belgium, in Leuven, Belgium. Jeroen Reyes's lab is there. So lots of places across the world. That's the one piece. The other piece, I think, the what used to be sort of a hypothesis, like that these microorganisms are kind of orchestrating what we're feeling and how we're making decisions and how we interact with people and how we live and how we feel. It used to be this kind of woo-woo,
I
hypothesis,
mean, it
and
sounds
now
a
it's
little
that, yeah,
far-fetched.
it does, doesn't it? But now we have evidence, it's like scientific evidence to show that what some people had an idea and a hypothesis that they wanted to test is actually true.
That's cool.
And it's so exciting for me, like I'm getting goosebumps just talking to you
Me
about
too,
it,
actually.
because yeah, isn't it incredible? Because I think and part of my theory that everything really starts in the gut, and that's why it's the intervention that once we look at it and begin to say, okay, well, I'm sort of going to look into this and I want to commit to looking at what I can do. When you begin to look into the foods, for example, that you eat or what you put on your skin, and you make changes in those areas in your life, you begin to see some positive changes pretty quickly, but it does require a commitment. So I think it's twofold. It's a new area of research, and it sounded a little bit out there, this hypothesis, but it really is showing some promise, a lot of promise.
Shows you how important it is to fund good research, especially when it impacts our
Absolutely.
health. So there's communication that is going on between the gut and the brain, obviously. I mean, if it's called the gut-brain connection. So how does the gut microbiome actually communicate with the brain?
Right. So this happens through the vagus nerve. So this is a large nerve. And I say large because it literally covers more than half of our body and touches every single organ. So it's part of this enteric nervous system that I was talking about earlier. And that's why I say there's secret communication because it's separate from the central nervous system. It has its own nervous system, but it uses pathways, all kinds of pathways to communicate with the brain. So neuroendocrine pathways, immune pathways, the major stress pathway that we have, the HPA axis, H stands for hypothalamus, P for pituitary, and A for adrenal. So both the hypothalamus and the pituitary are in the brain, they're glands in the brain, but the adrenals sit on top of the kidneys. And the kidneys are really intimately related with the heart. So they regulate, not only our cortisol and our stress hormones, but what happens to our heartbeat, our respiration, during a stress response. So, the idea that we can have this communication that's mostly about 90% of the communication between the gut and the brain is happening from the bottom up as opposed to the bottom down. So by the time our brain understands or knows, oh, I'm making this decision, or I'm choosing to do this. You really are not choosing it. It's already been chosen for you. Like the orchestration has been set in motion, a second earlier or a fraction of a second earlier, sometimes a little bit longer because of, how long it
Yeah,
has to
that's
travel.
fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me.
So one thing that I learned was during the pandemic, the number of digestion and stomach problems that were being diagnosed, like people were going to the doctor for way more of those. And they, I can't remember where I read this or heard this, but this was they say it's probably because that it is so connected to with our stress responses. And it's so and it, that led me to discover or to realize this pattern that I've had my whole life where I would get stomach aches that I couldn't explain. But then I realized those stomach aches were happening before something stressed me out, or when I was anxious about something. And it was so cool to figure that out because now I know if I have a stomach ache out of nowhere, what's going on? And it's really helped me. It's
It's like you're
crazy.
connecting the dots, right? Like
Yeah,
becoming
totally.
aware. Observing your body, listening to your body is going to help you understand, well, what was my trigger? What am I worried about? What was my thought process? How can I reframe those things as I, go into a similar situation in the future, right?
Exactly. And even if I look back on my life, like I was like really anxious as a child, very shy, very nervous around everybody. And I remember like I feel like I always had a stomach ache. And then I look back and I'm like, oh, my poor little Hannah.
I know, right? Having a little grace and showing that understanding for our younger selves. It's really part of what we need to do as individuals as we mature and grow and develop, become parents and start our parenting journey. But whether or not we're parents, just as we begin to understand ourselves better, right? But I think what you said about COVID and sort of having these visits become more and more often to the gastroenterologist or to psychologist or whatever. I think part of it was also that we were isolated. So we weren't in interaction with each other, right? Because what does bacteria like to do? It communicates. And so back to the
Interesting.
communication question, I forgot to tell you that the way that communication happens is not just, by itself out of the blue, right? There are bacteria, and not only bacteria in our gut, there are good bugs and bad bugs, but there are viruses, there are fungi, there are these, kind of protozoan kind of cell organisms that are called archaea, and all sorts of things that we still are learning about. And they are metabolizing our food. So the fiber that we ingest from the plant fiber, fruits, vegetables, that fiber is undigestible by our human cells. So we need bacteria to help us do that. And through their metabolic activity, they're called actually they're byproducts. Once they ferment the fiber, they have these byproducts that are called metabolites. And it's those metabolites that begin to communicate, through the enteric nervous system.
Interesting.
And not only do they communicate, they produce our vitamins, our B vitamins. So lots of the kids that or even adults that you might see in your practice will have some deficiencies.
Interesting.
And the number one thing will be in B vitamins.
Fascinating. Wow. I guess like I wonder if any of the reason why we don't talk about it is because the sort of like stigma around talking about poo.
I think so.
Right?
I mean, who wants to talk about poop, right? But,
No.
when I advise parents, for example, for the longest time, and it was partly, I didn't know why this was, but I think I might have shared with you that I am Greek. So I was born and partly raised in Greece. Excuse me. And one of the things that we were always looking at was our poop. And so your bowel movements or your child's bowel movements are going to tell you a whole lot about how healthy they are, how they might be feeling, what might be going on. So if you're seeing a lot of anxiety and depression, if you're seeing a lot of executive function, skills that need to get, supported, start looking at that poop. Because what we're really aiming for is a long snake that looks smooth in your poop. When you achieve that, that whatever you've been doing the last couple of days
It's
is actually
working.
helping you.
Yeah,
Yeah. Yeah.
okay.
So
Yeah.
if they change, then sort of go back to the things that might have helped you.
Yeah,
Yeah.
interesting. Yeah, I remember when my sister has a degree in public health, and she was working on some a study. She was working on a study, and they had to analyze data from a survey that people were filling out, and it was a poop survey, and there were all these pictures. I've seen it, the pictures
Yes,
of like the different
I
ways that your
forget the
poop
name of
can
the
look.
scale.
Yeah,
Exactly, right?
and we were laughing about it at the time,
Yeah.
but it sounds like it's actually a really good thing to be paying attention to.
It really is. And when babies are young, when they're in their infancy, and even after that, but certainly when they're infants, you're changing the diaper. If you're seeing it, if you're seeing any mucus in their poop, that is a sign that something is going on because our gut is lined with this mucus layer. And it's this one layer thick in the small intestine for the absorption of vitamins. But then there's this mucus layer in the colon. So when you're moving your bowels, if that mucus layer is also getting sort of released, something is going on. So pay attention. Yeah. It could be
Interesting.
that if you're nursing, and you're seeing that, maybe what you're ingesting, there's a
The
sensitivity in your
allergy.
baby. And
Interesting.
it doesn't have to be a full allergy. It could
Yeah,
be a
okay. You're
sensitivity that
right.
may develop into an allergy.
I see.
Yeah, so things to be sort of
So you
watchful
gotta
about.
read the poop news.
That's right. You got to read the poop. Yeah. Yeah.
All
It's really
right.
good.
Gosh, I love hosting a podcast. You just never know where the conversation's gonna
That's right.
So fun. All right. So you just talked about some signs to look for. What are some other signs that you might look for that you haven't mentioned that could indicate, some kind of gut health issue? Is there anything else we should keep our eye
Yeah,
out
so I
for?
think in general, other than having a diagnosis of some sort, right? That is a sign. But also, are you irritable? Are you yelling and snapping at the people around you? Are you cranky? Are you having trouble with your sleep? Are you picky in what you eat? Are you, and we find this, right? That when there is something going on in the gut, and the scientific term for that is dysbiosis. So, bad sort of life-giving spirit, it's a Greek word, right? So what does dysbiosis really mean? It's an imbalance of good to bad bacteria, but also a small variety of bacteria. So you want, when you don't have a lot of variable species in your gut, that is not good. It means you're probably eating a very limited diet. You're probably not eating a lot of plants and a lot of fiber, because fiber, remember, is, we call it prebiotic fiber. It's the food for your gut bugs. So if these gut bugs don't have any fiber to digest, they digest your mucus layer. They eat your mucus layer. So, yeah, it's important. So I'm just trying to think what else I haven't said. So how you're feeling, how you're making decisions, if you find that you're over and over making bad decisions in your life with your, partner or your child, or your child among friends or siblings, there's a lot of fighting.
That's
Those
so,
are all
yeah.
signs that
Right.
something's going on. Let's look at this more carefully. Yeah.
That's really cool. So it
Yeah.
truly is a gut-brain connection.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's a gut-brain connection, not a brain-gut connection. You're right. I mean, it's definitely bidirectional, no question, but a lot of it happens from the bottom up.
That's really interesting. All right, so okay, so once we've kind of figured out that something's going on, what can we do about it? Is there, are there, I mean, you mentioned fiber, so fiber is important. And maybe you can talk a little bit more about fiber and how to get fiber, and then some other things that we can eat.
So it turns out fiber is really important, but if you have dysbiosis happening, that probably means that you have more bad bugs than good bugs. So if you increase your fiber without doing anything else, you might actually feel worse. So you might have to sort of pause on the fiber until you begin to kind of heal your gut a little bit, and I can talk about a little bit about how to do that. But also a very healing practice to begin to explore for yourself and your family is to identify some fermented foods that your family might like. And of course, if you need fermented food, you're probably not going to want to eat fermented food because guess why? The bad bugs that are in charge of your gut are telling you, don't go there. You don't want that. You're not going to like that. It's literally that message that is coming from them saying, stay away from the stuff that you really need. And that it's not, and that's really no joke. It's
I
like
know I am
actually
laughing,
happen. No,
but I
I mean,
believe it.
I know. I appreciate it because it sounds so, otherworldly, but so there was a study that looked at fiber versus amount of fermented food that people were having, and which of the two would help gut diversity more. And it was the fermented food that was helping it more. So in that study, which I can give you, it's a Bostick is the name of the author, and other authors, colleagues there. Just a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, they did find that if you can have 6 servings of fermented food a day, that can really increase your microbiome diversity, and that's going to help you feel much, much better. So,
So my husband's family is Korean, and we go through phases, but we do eat quite a bit of fermented food just because it's so common in the Korean diet. I wonder how many studies, or I'm sure there have been studies done
There have
in
been.
cultures where there's a lot of fermented food eaten, but
So you're probably having some kimchi, maybe, if you like, spicy food. Kimchi is an example. Sauerkraut is an example. Pickles, good pickles. Now,
Yeah, not
when I
vinegar
say
pickles.
pickles, anything that's fermented, if in order for you to have some kind of benefit, you need to make sure that it was only fermented with salt. If there's any vinegar in there, it's going to kill all the probiotics, right? So a good
Vinegar pickles,
pickle,
they're good, but they don't count.
I know exactly. Olives are a fermented food. What else? Yogurt, kefir,
Kombucha.
kombucha, absolutely. If you just try a little bit of kombucha, if you're feeling down or you're feeling off or whatever, try it. And I know that I have just felt a lift almost immediately,
Yeah,
which is
interesting.
interesting to me how quickly you can feel something. The trick with having kombucha is drink it through a straw, because it could, wear away your enamel, depending on how
Right,
much
because it's
you're
so
drinking. Yeah.
acidic or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like
And
that.
you could dilute it with water and kind of have it throughout the day. That's another
So
strategy you could
how
use.
much what's the dosage? I mean, like how 'cause I know within what a tablespoon of these things there's probably billion, I don't know, millions. So do you need much?
You don't need much at all if we're talking about a fermented vegetable, for example, like kimchi or sauerkraut, and even yogurt. But it has to be a good yogurt. And with the tablespoons, if you are just starting out, I would go low and slow.
Yes.
So I would start with maybe, especially if it doesn't draw you, if it doesn't feel attractive to you, have a half a teaspoon once. And then the next day, maybe have a half a teaspoon twice. The idea is that very slowly work yourself up to a couple of tablespoons at every meal, or at least one meal a day. And
It's
so if you have a
better than
couple of
nothing.
tablespoons of that, right, and you have a couple of yogurts and you have a kombucha, you're already there. Look to see what's more helpful to you. And not all yogurts, for example, are good. A lot have much sugar in them. You want a plain yogurt that has many different types of probiotics, active and live, right?
And if you don't like plain yogurt, then you can sweeten it with honey or jelly or something, or some
Yeah,
fruit, or
right. Fruit is better, right? Berries always are, have amazing anti-inflammatory properties. Lots of polyphenols and those gut bugs, that's what they like to have, is polyphenols. So, yeah, honey is great. Jelly is great, or jam or whatever. Just don't overdo it because it is sugar, right? Just a little bit. It can go a long way. And a good honey, a raw honey, can be very therapeutic as well.
I
But
think
just
maple
go
syrup is pretty
slow.
good too for you, isn't
And
it?
maple
It's like
syrup,
high
but
in
look at the,
magnesium.
absolutely, but it's really high in sugar. So I think a couple of tablespoons, or maybe one tablespoon, it can't be one, whatever the serving size is, I think has like 52 grams of sugar.
Ooh,
So
wow.
you have to
You
really,
really
really
have to,
be, yeah, read the labels.
Okay, so can I tell you my breakfast every day, and you can rate it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. All right. So every day in the morning, I try not to eat a lot of gluten because I just don't really feel very good when I eat it. So I have a small piece of gluten-free bread with some peanut butter on it, and I love just like plain salted peanut butter. And then so I have that like when I first wake up, and then at 10, around 10, I've been making chia seed pudding, and I also mix in flaxseed, ground flaxseed, and then
Love it.
I'll put what I do is I mix oat milk with maybe a quarter of a cup of yogurt, and then I throw some fruit in there, whatever I have around.
That sounds
Is it
fabulous.
good? Oh, good.
It's very good because
Okay.
the chia and flax blend have a lot of fiber. Like, I don't remember how much you said, but I think there's like at least 4 grams of fiber in a
Oh,
tablespoon.
okay. That's
Or,
good.
there's a lot of fiber. And if you're even eating, so granola also has fiber, but any good cereal, again, though, when we're talking about what should you be careful about, everything you eat, especially anything you eat a lot of, should be organic because all the herbicides and pesticides that we're really, and I'm wondering now as I say pesticide, I wonder if that was the Pakistani study. Because there's so much research that has been done on glyphosate, which is this herbicide that all of our seeds and our crops and our grains have been sprayed with. The European equivalent to the EPA has banned it many, many years ago, and there is this movement to ban it here. However, they have replaced it with a new chemical. I cannot remember the name of it off the top of my head, but it's like 4 times as bad as what glyphosate was. So, we found it was carcinogenic, but it was also just changing the microbiome. This is why I believe we're seeing this uptick in cancer and all kinds of other diseases in young people. In their teens and 20s, colon cancers and things like this, which should not be happening. So be very careful of what you ingest. It should
So
be organic. Potato farmers and other farmers saying, you know what? I wouldn't eat my stuff
Yeah.
because it's
Okay.
laced.
Well, then what they need to do is stop making organic food so much more expensive.
Exactly.
And so
Well, I
then they need
think
to support the farmers so that they
that's
can
right.
grow
Absolutely.
organic food that isn't so costly to them.
Absolutely. It, 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 every Everything is connected.
Yeah.
So we have started to make baby steps, but until I think the consumer says, hey,
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy your stuff,
Yeah.
then those prices will not come down.
I was going to ask you if there's any foods that hurt the microbiome. I feel like we've covered that, but maybe there's could you go into that a little bit more? Is there
Yeah,
anything? I know sugar
definitely.
is a challenge for the gut.
Sugar is a huge, it's probably the number one enemy.
And it's in
And
everything. So all the,
it's
so
in
many
everything.
processed foods have sugar added to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I would say stay away from packaged food.
Yeah.
That anything that's packaged, you have to know what's in the ingredient list because there's so many emulsifiers, dough, even in your bread, dough conditioners, in your tortillas. You don't want calcium propionate to be propionate, did I say that right? In your bread. So like sourdough bread, a good sourdough bread, Trader Joe's has a great like San Francisco, I think is the name of it. That is a fermented product and it will be helpful for
That's
your
cool.
gut.
Yeah, if you have a Trader Joe's near you, I really encourage people to shop there because they don't
Absolutely.
have food with they don't carry food with preservatives in it. So that's really, really good to know. I mean, our
Is that
bread,
true? I didn't know that. Is that true?
I think it's true. Ooh, maybe I'll Google
I
it real
don't know. I
quick.
don't know.
So Trader Joe's explicitly states that they do not use artificial flavors or preservatives in their brand products. There's two very small exceptions: sulfur dioxide in some dried fruits to preserve color, and potassium sorbate in prunes to enhance moisture retention.
Okay. I didn't realize that they were.
Yeah, I
So
remember learning that a
wonderful.
really long time ago.
Okay.
So if you
Yeah,
have a
they do
Trader
have.
Joe's, I just read that they're opening up 30 more stores across the country. So hopefully you have one near you.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. That's great news. Yeah. So definitely the sugars, right? But also the saturated fat. And that doesn't mean that you should become vegan or vegetarian because we do need animal protein in our diet to be really healthy. And if you're looking at the Mediterranean diet, I told you I'm of Greek descent, and I've been eating the Mediterranean diet most of my life. And we eat everything, even though we do tend to eat more fish than meat, for example. But the omega-3s that are in animal products, we need those. You're not going to find, ALA is one of the ones that's found in plant food, but the DHA and EPA is found in animal food. So you want to make sure that when you're choosing to eat a meat or a fish, that it's coming from a pastured animal that was happy when it was alive. Not and fish, always wild, know where it's coming from. Make sure it's not from an area where there is high mercury or, polluted waters, for example. And you want to stay small. So think about the food chain. You can have some large fish, but don't have them often. So choose smaller fish like sardines or, something like that. Those are very healthy. Yeah.
Wow. And it's again, it comes back to that conversation for another day about access to this type of food, because there's so
Yes.
many people who just can't afford that, or
Yep.
maybe they were raised vegetarian and so they, it's too much of a leap for them to try introducing that stuff into there. So
Absolutely.
yeah, so just
Yeah.
yeah, this all this advice is given with that understanding of people's different
Absolutely.
perspectives and or not perspectives, but life experiences.
Absolutely. And cultures, right? Because the Mediterranean diet has been studied and it's been shown to be so good. But it doesn't just have to be the Mediterranean diet. It can be a diet that is in your cultural background, as long as you're following some of the same principles that, plant heavy, smattering of animal foods, definitely smattering of fermented foods. And social connection. I think that is why the Mediterranean diet is really impressive and is showing these results, is because all types of Mediterranean peoples who live in the Mediterranean region, so North Africa, Southern, Europe, Middle East, in that area, what you're finding is family is really important, friendships are really important. Many activities are kind of set up for social connection. Even, when I go to Greece and I say I'm going to go swimming, that's never a solitary event. That's a social event. You get into the water, you're moving your body, but you're laughing and talking with other people in the water,
And you're
So
outside.
it, and you're outside, you're outside. So that's another thing, exercise and also just being in green spaces is really important if you have ADHD or other executive function issues. Definitely, be careful about what you're ingesting, but also, be outside. 20 minutes in green spaces has been shown to actually affect impulse control and attention in kids with ADHD.
I believe it. We've been dog sitting for the last couple of weeks, so I've been walking every day. I exercise a lot, but I don't usually just go for a walk. I'm a little bit just more like I'm gonna just go exercise now. And so I've been walking every day, and I really enjoy it, and I really do feel good.
Isn't it amazing that you're actually noticing that? Because it is the best exercise. It involves all of your muscles, especially if you're moving your arms, for example. But you're doing a double duty when you're outside and you're mindful about the greenery that you're seeing, especially this time of year. The winter is a different a different issue, but spring and summer and fall, when you're just out in nature, it actually helps your psyche
That's really
and
cool.
lifts your spirits. And that, talking about spirits, that would be another thing that I would recommend to people, is to develop a spiritual practice. And I'm not necessarily talking about a religious practice, although we do have many studies that show that people who have a religious practice really do much better long term in terms of their life satisfaction and health. But I'm talking about just, thinking about the universe, or thinking about, nature as you're out on your nature walk, or, being very mindful of the sights and sounds that you're seeing, the birds that are, communicating with each other, and maybe you as you're walking by, So just that interaction with, I am a part of something bigger, that notion is very helpful.
Cool. So in your practice, how do you approach working with families?
So I have these three pillars in my model. One is stress and stress management, understanding that for each client, understanding the relationship history, early childhood, current relationships, how those go, behaviors, decision making, et cetera, how to strengthen those. And then food, what are you eating? And where all of these three pillars intersect is the gut. So I don't have to do any testing to tell you that there's something going on in your gut. Just from what you're telling me, I have you fill out some questionnaires, and we talk, we set goals, we tweak. I teach you how to cook certain things, which may sound very daunting if I say to you, you should be, it's a really good idea to be sitting at the table at least once a day with your family, where you're not rushed and not having negative conversations about any problems you're having, having cooked a meal. You might say, oh my God, there's no way I could ever do that. There are ways to do that, and it's simple as long as you're invested in trying to do it, to make it happen. And so, there are things that I think we can take as baby steps to begin. And that's what I ask my clients, how committed are you to changing some of this? Because you might have tried medication and you might have had some short-term good benefit, but over the long term, has that stayed? And usually those are the people that find me, is when they haven't had good luck with medication, because
I
I
was
don't
just
use
listening to a
medication.
podcast the other day, and he was saying how if you, I mean, it's something that we've heard, like the things that are hard are usually the things that are worth, you know, it's worth, if it's hard, it's worth
Exactly.
doing, right? But he was saying that
Exactly.
with your health, with your kids, it's not going to be easy. There's no easy way to do it. And but
Right.
you can start small, and you don't have to run the marathon in one day. I mean, we do that all the time in
Absolutely.
coaching, right? It's
Yeah.
there's no
Yeah.
expectation to do it all in the first
Yeah.
day. But it can be very daunting, like you said, to hear that. Like, I can't do that. But you don't have to do it
Absolutely.
perfectly ever. And you don't have to do it all at once.
Exactly. And I think the big lesson for parents is having the guts, pun intended there, to kind of be able to say no to your kids, because you know what they need. You know, a parent will know what they need. And unless we start that early, it gets harder and harder as the child grows up to
For
say
sure.
no, you know, to have those limits to help them, to help support them for their best, you know, life. But I just wanted to say that I am, because of my experience, I am writing a book on
Oh,
all of
cool.
this. And I hope to have it out by next spring,
Yeah, that's
hopefully.
exciting. Cool.
So you know, I'm sort of telling my story as a health memoir, but also infusing the research about the gut and
Cool.
about early childhood mental health. And yeah,
Cool.
so I'm
Exciting.
excited about it. Yeah.
Good, nice. So where can people find you?
Yeah, so you can, I have a website. It's getnewperspective.com, but you can also just send me an email, anastasia@getnewperspective.com. But I appreciate this opportunity. It's been
Yeah,
fun. Thank
thank
you.
you. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. My main takeaway from today's episode is that paying attention to our bodies and what they're trying to tell us can make a hugely positive difference in how we feel. And that what we put in our bodies also makes a difference, and even small changes are worth it. I also wanted to mention that you can make many of the fermented foods we talked about for tons less, and I mean tons, that it costs to buy them pre-made in the stores. And I've included some links in the chat for some of my favorite recipes. As always, this podcast is just a stop on your journey. It is not a substitute for medical or mental health advice. If you are considering any significant changes to your diet or health routine, it's best to consult with a qualified healthcare professional. If you have any thoughts on today's episode, I would love to hear from you at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. And thank you so much for helping us spread the word about executive function skills. Your shares and your reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and anywhere else you might listen really do make a difference. So thank you. You can sign up for our subscriber email so we can let you know when we've dropped new episodes. And you can find that on our podcast page, beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Many thanks to Sean Potts, our editor and producer, Anastasia, for joining me, and to my colleague Wendy Craven for connecting me with her. Thanks for listening.